Welcome, listeners, to a realm where shadows dance and whispers echo. I'm your host, Rick Clifton, and this is Quills and Chills, the podcast that brings you face-to-face with the masterminds behind the macabre. In each episode, we journey into the minds of horror writers and filmmakers to uncover the secrets lurking within their tales of terror. From classic tales to modern nightmares, we'll traverse the corridors of the human psyche and unravel the threads of dread that keep us turning the pages or sitting out there in the dark. Welcome to Quills and Chills. Hello, and welcome back to Quills and Chills. I'm your host, Rick Clifton, and today we are talking with author Jerry L. Wheeler. Jerry and I met at this year's Saints and Sinners Literary Festival in New Orleans. Saints and Sinners is a part of the annual Tennessee Williams Literary Festival, and I believe it's in its 21st year this year. Now, Jerry has published numerous short stories, interviews, articles, and essays, but today he is here to talk to me about this amazing little book called Pangs. So welcome to the show, Jerry.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. It's nice to be here.
I enjoyed this book so, so much, but before we dive into it, I actually want to talk a little bit about you. I'd love to get to know you a little bit. So tell us all about Jerry Wheeler.
Well, I could tell you, that's a long story. I'm an old guy, but I could tell you that I started writing about, I've been writing all my life, been in entertainment journalism for a number of years, and then took some time off, and then got hitched up with my late partner, and then he got lung cancer, and that was a very long, very torturous process. At the end of it, I decided to go back to writing, and that's been about 20 years ago. I made my first sale with a guy with a story that I submitted to my writing group. It was all about obsession. It was about a guy who fell in love with another guy, and the only time they ever saw each other was on the morning commute in their cars, in their separate cars. One of the guys in my writing group said I should submit it to this anthology about obsession called, it was Law of Desire. And the publishers were one of the first independent gay presses, Suspect Thoughts Press, headed by Greg Wharton and Ian Phillips. And I submitted it to them. And the next day I got email back from them. I'm like, the submissions are coming back even quicker than they usually do. And then they said they loved it and they wanted to publish it. And that was my first publication. And then I picked up with Saints and Sinners and I've been going ever since.
That's fantastic. So I want to talk a little bit about your process for writing then. And, you know, I realize you write in a different mediums from time to time, but let's say for Pangs or for novels, what's your process with that? Do you dive in with both feet? Are you an obsessive planner? Do you plot everything out? How do you sort of get started?
I'm not an obsessive planner at all, but neither am I a total pantser. I mean, I do have an idea of where I'm going, but sometimes it may take a couple of different tries to find the most successful route. With Pangs, actually, Pangs started as a novelette. I had written the first part of it as an ending to a collection of short stories and essays that I put out. And I liked it so much. And I didn't consciously leave it open-ended. But the more that I read it and the more that people reacted to that novelette, I'm like, okay, I guess I'm not done with these characters after all. I can think of one other thing to do with them. And that's what I did. So I actually went back to it. I took the novelette out of that book, substituted some other short fiction in there, and then wrote two other parts to it. And that's how Pangs became Pangs.
I was curious about that. I was going to ask because I know the book is in three parts and each part is it separately itself, its own story, but also connected to the other parts as well. So I was kind of curious how you came to that. And that's great. So I love the way it weaves itself together. I'm kind of curious, as someone myself, I'm a big fan of horror, have been since I was 12 years old. I'm always intrigued how people find their own path to horror itself. And I know you write in different genres, but I'm curious, what sort of sparked your journey to write this story?
Edgar Allan Poe. if you get the short story collection, Poe was a big influence on me, Poe and Nathaniel Hawthorne. So I started out with like a sense of the macabre, just from the very beginning. And then with Edgar Allan Poe came a whole bunch of science fiction, including Ray Bradbury, who is my second favorite. And when it came time to do this novelette to end my short story collection, the guy that was publishing me at the time challenged me to do a vampire story. And I was like, everybody does vampire stories. Vampires are boring. You know, they drink the blood and they do that and you kill them with a stake. So I thought, well, what if they drank something different? And then I thought, well, how about talent and musical talent at that? Because I have none. So I thought, well, okay, let's get those on the ground. I love music. I have 1500 CDs. I mean, but I have no talent in that respect whatsoever. So I thought, well, okay, let's do that. And that was how the novelette got written. And that was how Pangs pretty much got started.
Well, that's great. I think we've talked a little bit about it now, but let's dive into Pangs, shall we? So give us a little bit of an overview about the story itself. And you've talked a little bit about how it's evolved, but talk a little bit about the story and sort of what it's all about.
Well, it's about two talent vampires, Warner and Seth, who are kind of frenemies. They're the oldest and the most powerful of their kind. And they've both been around for centuries, and they've both run up against each other in competition for the most talented individuals, who of course have the most talent, who have the most food, or what I called essence, to offer. So that's they first, in the very first part, team up to vanquish a common foe. And then once they vanquish that common foe, unfortunately, Warner is seriously injured in psychologically and can't feed it any longer. So the second part deals with getting him back to normal and ready to go ahead and take the fight that they lost last time to the next level and fight this guy on his own territory, which happens to be a shadow realm that has nothing to do with New Orleans, where the first part is set. And they vanquish him and then find that he is not the only problem. There is another problem, which they also have to vanquish by the end. And then along the way, they meet a rather stylized version of Edgar Allan Poe.
Well, one of my favorite characters in the story, by the way.
So. You liked that, did you?
Yep.
Very much based on my late partner, especially his looks.
No, oh, that's fantastic. No, it was Eddie was one of my favorite characters out of the story.
Great. I'm really glad you enjoyed it.
I really, really did. It's just, like I said, when I got back from Saints and Sinners, I sat down and started reading this book, and it just, like, every day I would come home from work, I'm like, okay, I've got to read more. You know, and you only get so much time out of the day, right, that you can read, but I'm like, I have to just, maybe I get one more chapter in.
Right.
So one of my favorite lines, by the way, is pretty early in the book, and I just thought it was just so, like, deep and meaningful, and it was the line that you use is, I remind myself that change is neither good nor bad, it is simply change, and I just thought that was such a powerful sort of statement. I just loved it. I thought it was so powerful, I wrote it down. I was like, I just love this, so maybe I'll make a shirt out of it.
Yes, that's very much Warner. Warner is very much someone who's just very accepting of his own circumstances, and he has a thing. He and I both have a thing for New Orleans. One of my favorite lines, actually, is when he says he remembers New Orleans when it was not chilled for tourism.
That too. And I think he's walking into, I think it's a bar, and he opens the door and he's blasted by the air conditioning. And that's when he's like, I remember when we didn't chill this for tourism or something to that effect. So.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really great.
Yep.
I was like, I can kind of relate to that. Although I'm probably a fan of the air conditioning, to be quite honest.
Yes. But in normally, if you're not as insane to say, it does get kind of chilly.
Uh-huh. It did. Yeah. Especially with the rain. So Warner and Seth sort of go on a unique personal journey throughout the story. And you've talked a little bit about that. What I especially loved the most about their relationship is how it grew and changed throughout the story. And you, as you said, they at one point they had to put aside their own personal issues and learn to work together to take down a common foe. Mm-hmm. And as the story progressed, they really did sort of grow to sort of, I don't want to say love, but maybe respect and honor one another. And I thought that was really, really great. I was wondering if you could talk about sort of the process of creating these characters and are they related to people you know in your life?
I'm not sure that they're related to people that I know. I think they're pretty much total fiction. Warner, in particular, the point of view character, is my smart-ass supernatural character, who his is a voice that is very Poe-like to me, and that sometimes is a default whenever I write in that particular genre, the world-weary sort of, basically smart-ass vampire. So that's, and Seth is just the opposite. I mean, he's somebody who really doesn't care for humanity. He has no respect for humanity. It's a means to living for him. And Warner's not quite like that. Warner's more of a humanist. I mean, he understands, he appreciates humankind, and doesn't want to rip it apart the way Seth does. But they do manage, once you get both of them away from the competition of hunting for meals, they both do manage to find some common ground. And by the end, they are grudgingly friends, but by the end, they're stuck in a shadow realm and they have nobody else to talk to.
I would say at the end, they're very much me and my bestie, Dan, who you know from Saints and Sinners. That is very much our relationship today. So, and I absolutely love Warner's snark. I had so many laugh out loud moments where I was like, oh my God, it's hilarious. And I could relate to a lot of that dialogue for sure. Are there any specific characters in your book that you feel a strong connection to? And if so, why is that? What makes them so memorable for you? For me, I told you,
mine is the same because he is based kind of on my late partner. And my late partner was very much a person who really wasn't concerned with conventionality. He really liked being unconventional, and he was different because he enjoyed being different. He enjoyed the reaction that he got from other people. And that's very much the way I wanted Eddie to be.
Well, I love that. I love that. I love that so much. We talked about, you mentioned New Orleans, and I think that setting always plays a crucial role, right, in any story. But how did you go about choosing New Orleans? Why New Orleans? Was it because of the music? That's what I want to believe. So please confirm I'm right.
Yeah, kind of, sort of. But, you know, to be perfectly honest, I mean, I started it when I got back from Saints and Sinners. And New Orleans has a very special place in my heart. As a matter of fact, the very first Saints and Sinners that I went to, I got off the plane and I felt like I had been in the Quarter before. And it's true to this day, you can't get me lost in the Quarter. So, you know, I've often said that I'll go back and move there, but the guys that I used to stay with there said, why don't you come back in August and tell us that?
Well, I would probably agree with that. I have not been to New Orleans in August, September. I've been early spring and usually around Christmas time. And yeah, so I'm a little afraid of the humidity, and yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
Maybe one day.
But you know, it's such a it's such a fertile town for creative people. You know,
yes.
Sometimes you just you get to walking in the corridor just from the bar to the bar, and all of a sudden you get an idea, and you're like, oh, that's perfect. I've got to go home and write this down. And so it seemed to me to be the natural place to set it because I was just there.
That's great. So your narrative style has been praised, and there is a quote in particular that I really loved, and I'm just going to read it's a long quote, so I'm just going to read just a portion of it. It's from Lee Thomas. There's magic in the pages of Jerry L. Wheeler's Pangs, and it's not just the paranormal goings on that taunt, tease, and push his characters deeper into the adventure. And it's a quote that when I read it, I was like, yes, I totally agree with that. And I'm curious, how did you, like, did you feel like this voice came to you naturally as you were writing the story?
Warner's voice?
Yes.
Yeah. From the very first paragraph.
Right. I can feel it. Jerry, I can feel it. Yeah, I can totally feel it. It just comes right off the page for me. So I believe you.
Thank you. It's true.
All right. Without giving too much away, because I don't want to talk about spoilers too much, but is there a pivotal moment or a scene in the book for you that you feel like readers should look forward to? Mine is the showdown in the hotel in Chelsea, because that one I was glued. I was like, oh my God, what's happening? I was glued to the page.
Yeah, actually, I would say it's a toss up between that one and the final confrontation with the creature in the shadow realm, because that one I waited a long time to get to, and I was very concerned about the blocking elements in that particular section. So that was one that I went over and over and over and over and over again. But yeah, I would point to that one as one of my favorite, or maybe a pivotal scene. And then also I really liked Eddie in the bookshop the first time that Eddie shows up. That was fun to write.
Yeah. I will say the twist in the hotel, I did not see coming. And I like to pride myself that I can see those at 20 clicks, and I didn't even not see that coming. So well done.
Really? Thank you. The guy that originally published that hated it.
Oh my God, no, I loved it. I'm a big fan. So, and then again, I got to be careful about spoilers, but once the twist was revealed, I was like, well, of course. Of course. I mean, it just
right. So, yeah. Naturally.
Exactly. So what unique message or experience do you hope that your readers will take away from reading Pangs?
Oh, look at vampires in a different way. Mm-hmm. Think of them in a totally different way, because the old vampires are tried and true. But I think they ought to be. We ought to be doing something different with them. We've done that now, which is why I thought this would be a good vampire tale, but also a different vampire tale.
No, it truly is too. It's like you had told me, actually, I think when we were in New Orleans, that it was a little bit different of a vampire story. So I was excited to. I didn't go in expecting the usual vampire lore, but I was excited to see how it mm-hmm. sort of played out. So,
well, and see, that was the really, really fun part about it, was that, you know, presenting a different kind of vampire, it's like the parts of the vampire myth that are convenient, I'll take. The ones that are not convenient, no, mine just don't do that.
Exactly. Exactly. So, Jerry, what authors or who are you reading right now? What's on your bookshelf at the moment?
What's on my bookshelf right now is a bunch of poetry books that I have to get ready for the blog for National Poetry Month, since I run out in print queer book reviews. Of course, April is National Poetry Month, so I've got four books that I'm getting ready for a post on National Poetry Month. A.J. Dolman, Raymond Lussac, Brad Blue, and I can't remember the last person's name, but I've got four in mind that I'm working on. And I just finished judging the Farrell Grumley Awards for the Publishing Triangle. So oh, wow. I'm kind of reeling from reading 65 books from December 15th until the last week of February.
All right, you're my hero. You're my new hero, man. 65 books. That's insane. I love it. So I know when we were in Saints and Sinners, you were on a few panels talking about your latest book, Mercedes General. So I just want to kind of give you a minute to talk a little bit about that. I know it's a series of short stories, right?
Yes, it's totally different from the vampire thing, totally. And it's a series of linked short stories that show the progression of a couple who met when they were 7 and 8 years old, respectively. And this takes them through 40 years worth of experiences, deaths, meetings, fame, fortune, and crashes. It was a fairly ambitious project to span 40 years. But that also includes the AIDS epidemic. I think it goes from 1966 to 2006.
Wow. I know I did hear you talking about it in New Orleans, and I'm putting that in my rotation. So I'm excited to dive into it.
Great.
It will be very soon. Great. I don't know if I can hit 65 books in that amount of time that you did, but I'll give it my best shot. All right, Jerry, what's next on the horizon for you? What are you working on now that you can tell us about?
I'm working on a short story about sin eaters.
Oh, fun.
Yes.
I like it.
And then I'm going to do something a little different and try a novel that is not done in pieces. Yeah, I can't really say anything about that because it's kind of an interesting concept, and I've been having it in the back of my mind for a couple of years now, and making notes and doing those kind of things. And finally, I think I'm hitting a structure on it. So I'll be starting it probably after I finish the Sin Eater story.
All right. I'm excited for the Sin Eater story too. So hit me up when it's ready, or I'll keep an eye out too, because I would love to take a look. So
I will.
So the book is called Pangs. It's available online and everywhere now. And as I always say here at Quills and Chills, please always support your local bookstores whenever possible. So, Jerry, how can our audience find you on social media?
Jerry L. Wheeler on Facebook, and I'm J.W. Den on Instagram. And I'm also on Blue Sky. I'm J.W. Den there too. I used to be on Twitter, but not anymore.
Yep. And what's the blog, if anyone's interested in the blog?
The blog is out in print, Queer Book Reviews, and it's a WordPress blog. So
perfect. Great. Jerry, great. Thank you so much for talking to me today. I really appreciate your time. I'm being mindful of our time because I know you are a very busy man and you've got other things to do this morning. So I appreciate your time. All right.
Thank you. And it was a great opportunity. Thanks for the discussion. It was wonderful. I enjoyed myself.
All right, everybody. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on Quills and Chills. Thanks for joining me on another episode of Quills and Chills. I hope you enjoyed our deep dive into the mysterious and the haunted. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to support us by subscribing on your preferred podcast platform and leaving us a rating or review. Because your feedback helps keep those chills running down both our spines. And feel free to share the show with your favorite fellow horror enthusiasts. Also, if you guys have any spooky stories, strange encounters, or paranormal experiences of your own, I'd love to hear them. Reach out to me on social media or email me at quillsandchillspodcast@gmail.com. Who knows? Your story might end up on a very special episode. Anyway, thanks for listening, and I will see you back here next time on Quills and Chills. Bye, y'all.